You're listening to a Connecting Teach Central podcast. I'm Susan Everhart. Our topic today is a good classroom behavior management system. Joining me is Dr. Tom McIntyre. Welcome, Tom, and thanks for being here.
Thank you again for the invitation, Susan.
On your website, you have the four components of just about any good classroom behavior management system, and it seems simple, and it probably is not.
All right. Yeah, certainly we've read it all in the textbooks. Kids need structure. The classrooms need to have discipline, but very rarely do we see it delineated as to what we can do. And while behavior management systems vary from teacher to teacher, if we look at what the experts are saying on how to set up a classroom behavior management system, we look at these the comprehensive classroom systems of positive and effective behavior managers, we do seem to see four principles, four components over and over again.
Your first component is setting up the rules. Let's talk about rules in a classroom.
We typically set those up first day of school, not always. We will see that sometimes teachers allow situations to be developed, speak with the youngsters about that situation and the guidelines and rules that need to be followed. But primarily it's the first day of school, and we have to decide how many rules. Is it 1, 12, 154 with several subclauses? So we can say, Fran, you just violated item 4 of paragraph D of subsection 6 of part 27. But typically what we see is 4 to 6 rules. I have seen teachers with more and teachers with less. Those with more tend to be overlapping the school rules or tend to be micromanaging, and when they could use broader principles and use role-playing of the rules being followed, violations of the rules, having the kids react to those role-plays, and developing an understanding of rules that are a bit more general. Stating them in a positive manner. Too often I see rules posted that say don't do this and know that, but they don't tell the youngsters what is civil behavior, what the expectations are. So what we want to have are rules that identify the behavior it is that we'd like to see. No yelling out answers becomes raise hand and be recognized by the teacher. No running becomes walk. And there's also a thought that no rules and don't rules are actually suggestive. Kids hear the action word rather than seeing the no or the don't. It's like saying, don't think of a red rhinoceros. You know, preposterous. And so if kids say, see, no talking, they spot the talking, and we're afraid that it might actually be suggestive. But do make the rules specific, make them clear. I think there is one exception to that rule on rules, which is oftentimes our last rule is show respect for self and others. It's sort of like the police have it in their penal code. If they can't get you under anything else, they can always get you under disturbing the peace. Whatever isn't covered specifically is covered under disturbing the peace. And we talk about what it means to show respect for self, what it means to show respect for others. For younger kids, it does help to post the rules. There is some validity that is offered. And as youngsters scan the room, as they do periodically while they're thinking, they spot those rules and they serve as reminders. I would say, though, that with some of our older kids, we move into middle school and junior high school and senior high school. You know, if we go with the rules and we make the rules with the kids as we do typically with the younger groups, the kids are just mouthing the words. They're giving us the usual rules that they've had every year after year after year. And we might instead want to go with some principles to live by, some things they can take into their lives. And instead of having rules, having a code of conduct. And up there on the poster, after we've discussed it and built, you know, discussed the system with the youngsters, are things like respect others. Be trustworthy, be responsible, be safe. And these are principles to live by. And we can say, was that action safe? Was that action responsible? And you can find out more about this on the BehaviorAdvisor.com website if one is interested in setting up that code of conduct.
From time to time, even the best classroom manager will have a student who breaks the rules.
Well, we do need to draw the line in the sand and say that that line is unacceptable. And so we do need typically a series of consequences. Initially, there's the warning. And I even have some concerns about the use of that word. It sounds condescending. It sounds coercive. I prefer the word reminder. This is your reminder. And even before we give the reminder or the warning, I would hope that the teacher is engaged in some subtle behavior management, trying to distract the youngster back on task, offering some support, moving a little bit closer to the youngster, what's known as proximity control, before we ever go with the official cease and desist notice. But if the youngster fails to comply, then we have a series of a sequentially more punitive list that it might be the loss of 5 minutes of recess, then the loss of 10 minutes of recess. But as the youngster is having difficulty complying with our initial direction, which we do remind the youngster what ought to be done, what behavior we'd like to see, instead of saying, don't push me, you'll lose another 5 minutes, it's, I'd like to see you save the rest of recess by doing this. It's the benefits of complying versus if you don't, you're going to get this. In the secondary schools, we usually have about 5 minutes of hallway passing between classes, and you might get permission from the administrator to hold a youngster back for 20 seconds after the bell rings, 40 seconds after the bell rings, perhaps up to 2 minutes, because kids want to make those social connections out in the hallways, and even being 20 seconds late, leaving the room, can interfere with the connections that you want to make with your friends before the next class. So that can be a motivator. Always along with the consequences are looking for kids doing the right thing. Too many teachers hang their hats on the penalties, and they forget that when madness is ensuing in the classroom or when somebody is misbehaving, we ought to be looking for somebody doing the right thing too. With younger kids, we can be very obvious in our wording and very demonstrative in our language. Oh, I like the way Tony is sitting like a pretzel on the rug. Oh, thank you for hanging up your coat so quickly. And the other, and that's then we get what's known as the ripple effect. That statement is like throwing a pebble into a still pond, and the effect moves out as other kids then engage in that behavior and say, "I'm doing it too. I'm doing it too." And we can say, thank you, I like the way you're hanging up your coat. Certainly as the kids get older, we have to be a little bit more subtle in that sort of use of recognition. And it's smiles. It's table three is showing me they're ready to start. More general praise versus specific, you are doing well, individual student sort of praise. And private praise, going up to the youngster, whispering something in the ear, dropping off a post-it note with a nice comment on it.
So we've talked about catching them being good and rules and consequences, and your fourth component is consistency.
Yes, we need to be predictable. Kids are judging, either subconsciously or consciously, what benefits will come in this situation from various behaviors. And if we lack predictability in following through and catching kids being good or giving cease and desist reminders and small penalties, then the youngster says, you know, maybe I can get away with this today. I think perhaps the teacher might let me slide today. The kids need to know what the rules and regulations are in the classroom, that they exist at all times, that today is like the other day, that this period is like the other period. And then they'll make better behavior choices because they know how the teacher is going to react in a situation. And I think while it may not be a fifth component, there's certainly something else that needs to be placed in there, which is behavior like academics is taught. And if a youngster has an aberrant behavior pattern, has a persistent behavioral issue, then we need to teach the replacement behaviors that give that kid at least as many benefits as is being brought about by the undesirable behavior at the moment.
Join us next time when we talk with Tom about teaching and learning styles. I'm Susan Everhart for Teach Central. Thanks for listening.